97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome into the Mark Cox Morning Show. Happy September to you, and glad that you're with us here on this Tuesday morning. A little chilly out there in some spots. It was in the 50s this morning. Nice reminder that that fall is just around the corner. I guess we have to wait to what, late September till it's officially
September
fall?
September 21st.
And then it will immediately turn 100 degrees again.
Well, it feels like fall every day in the studio, so it might be 90 degrees outside in the middle of June, but it's always really cool, 60 degrees here in the studio.
Got to keep the host and the control board cool over here, because I'm getting heated sometimes these days when I'm talking about this stuff.
That's fair.
Just telling you. That's why they do that. Anyway, we've got lots to get to for you here. I do want to mention, before we go any further, because I brought this up earlier in the show, had a fantastic time Saturday night. Carl Middleman missed out on it. He could have been there.
Could have.
Samuel Hagar was in town, sold out the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, and it was a fantastic show. I knew he would do a little extra for St. Louis, and he did, Carl.
He did.
Even sang Cabo Wabo
at the end of the show.
At the end, a cappella.
Yes, he was supposed to, they added that because they were doing rock and roll, but now John Bonham's son Jason was not there.
Was not there.
So they needed to fill.
Ah. They needed to fill?
Fill.
I don't know
they
about
needed
that.
Songs
I think they just
that they
did it because they love St. Louis. He said that repeatedly.
Well, of course he did. How many shirts did he wear?
Just a couple, actually. He put a few jerseys on and then tossed them back to the crowd. I bought a shirt, and you know, Kim, don't make fun of me for this, but I paid $50 for a T-shirt.
Was it on Facebook Marketplace?
No. It was at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. I paid $50 for a T-shirt.
That sounds about right.
Did you tell your wife this?
She'll
learning
see it
right
soon
now
enough.
If she's listening.
Yeah, and you know, normally I wouldn't have done it. But I don't know how many more of these Sammy's got in him. He will celebrate his 77th birthday next month in Cabo San Lucas, Mexico, at Cabo Wabo.
Well, so I had to. Trump I went ahead is 78 and he's running for president. So,
and here's the great thing: the lines were huge because it was a sold out show. The lines were huge, and they had a little code you could scan with your phone, and you could buy the shirt online and then pick it up. You could skip the line. Ooh. You just walked right up to the counter and got the shirt. So I did that. And all those people were waiting in long lines. Now they had a more limited selection online. But still, I outsmarted them all and paid my $50 and got out of there.
I hope you really enjoy that T-shirt.
Somebody want to know if I... What did they want to know, Carl? What did Tommy want to know?
Tommy wanted to know if you tipped on your $23 beers.
I tipped on my beers. Let's put it that way. My beers were not $23, but I did tip on them. Yes.
Did you tip the generous 20% or what did you tip?
I tipped whatever cash I had in my wallet. So that's
here's the $1. Here's the $2 I have in my wallet.
Yeah.
Couple quarters.
I'm sure she did just fine.
He tipped the bartender.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Coming up, we're going to talk more about the Trump-Harris debate. It is 1 week away from today. Going to be a big deal. If you missed out on our debate watch party, I'm sorry. It filled up quickly, and there's no more space out there. I apologize for that. But of course, we'll have full coverage of it here. And we're going to talk to Mark Meredith from Fox News here at the bottom of the hour. I've been covering the story this morning. I don't know if the mainstream media is covering it or not. They're covering the wrong angle of it about the reaction in Israel to the death of these hostages. And the Biden administration putting more pressure on Israel to come to a ceasefire agreement, even though Hamas won't come to the table. I fail to understand that. Mark Meredith's covering it for Fox this morning, and we're going to get to that at about 8:35. So that's all coming up. Right now, Carl, let's get to the short list, please.
The Mark Cox short list.
He's a habitual liar. He lies about everything. He lies about stuff that doesn't make sense. You're taking a piece of their thunder, and you're trying to capture it and putting it in a bottle for yourself.
Yeah, that is some of Tim Walz, Kamala Harris, the vice presidential candidate, some of his former military members in his unit who come together. They went on Megyn Kelly's show, and they are reading him the Riot Act for stolen valor.
Union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time.
Who was that? I didn't recognize her. Was that a woman from the Deep South running for president of the United States? Why, no. It was San Francisco liberal Kamala Harris.
Kamala. Kamala! You don't talk like that! You are an Indian woman from California.
One of the influencers, this cracked me up. I got to play the whole thing for you. It's a split screen, and he's listening to her speak, and then he looks into the camera, and he just reads her the riot act for faking this accent, talking to labor union supporters up in Detroit.
Those are the exact Midwestern values, qualities, and work ethic that make Tom, will make Tom a great vice president.
Do you know who Tom is? Just out of interest, Kim?
No.
You don't? Because that guy didn't either. That was Tony Evers, right? The Wisconsin governor giving a speech in support of Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota. But guess what? He called him Tom twice in the speech. Like, doesn't even know the guy well enough to know what his first name is, but came out and gave a big rousing speech to endorse him.
He's hoping it's like a tomato-tomato, right? It's not quite like that.
It'd be Timato-tomato.
Timato-tomato. Go ahead and play Cut 11 again for the people, Carl, please.
Those are the exact Midwestern values, qualities, and work ethic that make Tom, will make Tom a great vice president.
Well, they got some real fire-breathing politicians up there in Wisconsin, don't they?
Don't you know?
It's going to make Tom a great president. You don't even know his name, dude. Stop. That's embarrassing. I'll tell you what's equally embarrassing. Carl, here's what I want you to do. I want you to play Cut 7 and then play Cut 6 for a little compare and contrast. And then please go straight into Cut 8.
You better thank a union member for the 5-day work week. You better thank a union member for sick leave. You better thank a union member for paid leave. You better thank a union member for vacation time. Let's just get through the next 64 days. How about that?
Kamala. You don't talk like that. You are an Indian woman from California. And you over here trying to sound like you was raised in somewhere in the dirty South. Like you was raised in Georgia. Like you was raised somewhere in the neck of the woods in Louisiana. A damn Indian from California. Trying to sound black so she can get a black vote. You ain't getting my girl, Kamala Harris.
That's funny. I'm sorry. I thought he kept going there because it was longer than that. We edited it down.
It is so sad that some people like that she just totally transforms her accent based on where she's campaigning.
Absolutely. It's the same thing that Hillary Clinton did all the time.
I don't feel no ways tired.
Remember that from Georgia when she was campaigning in Georgia? I mean, that's just kind of what you've come to expect from them. They're always pandering. Always.
Not that she would come pandering to Missouri because we know Trump will win, but would she be like, I'm going to wash my clothes
in Missouri?
I'm going to wash them.
Maybe. Coming up, speaking of Kamala Harris, what accent will she use in the debate? 1 week from today, we're going to check in with Jared Halpern from Fox News Radio at 8:20. Stay tuned.
Look, ABC is probably the worst in terms of fairness. George Flapadopoulos, the people they have there are just terrible. Head of ABC is her best friend and her husband's best friend, too. And I had to make a decision. Do I want to debate? I'd like to debate. I mean, I guess I won a lot of debates because otherwise I wouldn't have been president.
I had to look that up because I didn't know what the President Trump was referring to there. And apparently It is a reference to Dana Walden, who's the co-chair of Disney Entertainment, owns ABC News, and her husband and Doug Emhoff have been apparently good friends since like the 1980s or something like that. So he believes that that's the ABC connection and maybe why the Harris campaign is insistent on having the debate on ABC News and not including Fox or one of the other channels in that. Just wanted to explain that. Jared Halpern has been covering that a week out, right, from the debate. Jared, good morning to you.
Yeah, good morning. 1 week. Listen, I think that it's going to be really a seminal moment. That first debate in June was monumental in kind of what it did to shake up the political landscape. And I think both campaigns here are pretty hungry for this matchup. Could be the only time, certainly the only time before early voting begins in a handful of states that we see Biden and Harris against one another. And so, excuse me, Trump and Harris against one another. And if you're the Harris campaign, certainly, you know, the goal here is to separate yourself, not just from Trump and kind of show, you know, whether it's temperament or any of the other, but, you know, to a certain extent here, try and find some separation from Biden. That's going to be the goal of the Trump campaign, we're told, is to really tie her to a lot of these Biden administration policies. And I think if you're Harris, the challenge is going to be, as we've heard from some folks with the campaign, you know, just kind of staying the course, right? Staying on message, not letting interruptions or anything else kind of frazzle you, and stick to the message that's been working up to this point.
Do you think Kamala Harris will actually discuss any of her policies? Because up until this point, she's been pretty tight-lipped about how she feels about certain things, or is flip-flopped.
Yeah, I mean, listen, she's been asked, obviously, in that CNN interview about some of the policy flips that she's had. I think that both candidates are probably going to be asked some pretty pointed questions about flips that they've had on certain issues. And certainly you would imagine that it's an area that Trump's going to try and challenge her on. So, yeah, I think that's why I'm saying I think this is a high kind of tightrope for both candidates to kind of walk here, because it's going to be probably the biggest event between now and Election Day, at least, where you see these two candidates on stage together.
Well, the challenge here, and, you know, I don't know, Jared, you've probably done some of these debate moderations at some level over the years. I did a couple when I was still involved in journalism here in St. Louis. And the key is the follow-up is what I find. Like in the Dana Bash interview the other day with Vice President Harris, I think she missed some key follow-up opportunities. I really hope the journalists on ABC will step up when either Trump or Harris refuse to answer questions and double down and ask the question again.
Well, listen, I don't know, as far as Bash is concerned, kind of what the time, you know, when you're doing those types of interviews, you're trying to sometimes play beat the clock, right? You don't know how much time necessarily you have. A debate, you know, I've talked to moderators who have done it at this level. They have different strategies. Sometimes the idea is, you know, they kind of just want to facilitate a conversation between the two candidates and let them kind of dictate where these go. Other times, you know, the moderators take a little bit more of a active role in that questioning. And what we'll find out, I think, pretty early on in this debate, kind of how ABC News kind of views the role of the moderators in this debate.
Yeah, absolutely. Jared, we're out of time. I appreciate you giving me a few minutes this morning. Thank you.
Sure thing.
Yep. Talk to you soon. Jared Halpern there from Fox News Radio. Coming up, why in the world are all of these Israelis that took to the streets yesterday mad at Benjamin Netanyahu? I don't get it. We're going to talk to Mark Meredith coming up. Joe Biden is apparently unhappy with Benji Netanyahu as well. We'll find out why right after the break.
You steadfastly refuse all proposals. Even worse, at the exact same time, it murdered 6 of our hostages. Whoever murders hostages does not want a deal.
Yeah, that is an interpreter there covering Benjamin Netanyahu's address to the nation of Israel, where protests have broken out on the streets over there with a percentage of the population at least demanding some sort of an immediate ceasefire after the death of the 5 or 6 hostages that were announced, I believe, Friday is when we heard about that. Let's get to Mark Meredith, of course. He's a Fox News reporter. He's been at the White House all morning talking about the Biden administration's approach to all this. Mark, welcome in.
Mark, good to be with you. You're right. I mean, as we start this week, obviously it's a solemn note because they're having to come to the reality of these six hostages that were executed last week. Of course, that's just learning the details, including the American, the 23-year-old. And the White House has come out with a pretty strong statement saying they're outraged by this. They're devastated because they've been working to secure this man's release now for, what is it, 10 months, almost 11 months now. And you can imagine that the just outrage over the barbarity of the execution has gotten. But of course, there's also been a focus on what's next. The White House has been trying to say that they are still working with the U.S., working with Qatar and Egypt to secure some sort of peace deal going forward. But you have to wonder, Mark, at this point, you know, how quickly is that really going to happen, given some of the comments of the last 24 hours?
I just wonder what else the U.S. expects out of Benjamin Netanyahu. In his speech, he said, We've come to the table. We've agreed to the terms of the ceasefire. It's Hamas who won't agree to anything. They won't even come to the table. Why is Benjamin Netanyahu being blamed for this?
Well, you've also seen some of the outrage in Israel, too, where they've been upset with Netanyahu as well. So I would imagine that it's kind of reactionary to both what's happening here in the United States, but also in Israel. As to, you know, Netanyahu has certainly had an interesting relationship with the Biden administration. Yes, in the immediate aftermath of the attacks, we saw the president make it very clear that the U.S. has no closer ally, that they were going to do whatever they can. But since then, as Israel's retaliated, we have, of course, seen the White House try to walk a fine line of what is support and what they think is acceptable and what is not. In terms of a peace deal, though, the president was asked yesterday, you know, is Netanyahu doing enough? Do you think that Netanyahu is working hard enough to secure peace? And the president said no, and then he moved on. He didn't really elaborate further from there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I saw a poll that 49% of Israelis support Netanyahu, 43% don't. I mean, he's been sort of on the cusp of being thrown out of office there several times, but he's managed to hang on to power. And in light of what the threat Hamas poses, like my co-anchor Kim was saying here earlier, isn't the hang up with Hamas the fact that they demand all of these Palestinians be released from Israeli jails? Is that sort of the key here, Mark? Do you know?
That is one of the hangups. Yes, that is one of the demands that Hamas would have. Essentially, you kind of think of it as an exchange, if you will, for those hostages that are still in custody of Hamas. You know, they're just going to say, well, we'll give you this for that. The U.S. obviously is really trying to find a way just to prevent further bloodshed. I mean, you talk about how many tens of thousands of lives have been disrupted ever since the violence of October 7th. The Israelis are saying, you know, we can't make a deal because we don't necessarily trust what's going to come next. And so the U.S. is hoping, by relying on our Mideast allies, that maybe they'd be able to hold together some sort of framework for a deal, because the U.S. doing it alone is clearly not going to work.
I know the International Criminal Court was accusing Netanyahu of war crimes because of his response to the attack on October 7th. Do you know any update to that by chance?
I don't. And the ICC obviously doesn't have as much weight here in the United States.
Right.
I mean, there's been, it's one of those things where I feel like it's a headline that's made and then people just simply move on. And just in terms of the way that the ICC would not be recognized by the U.S. at this point. But obviously the White House has made it very clear that they would like to see Israel be able to defend itself, that they are going to do what they can to support them, prevent future terrorist attacks, because they see Hamas as the terrorist organization. But in terms of the way those retaliatory attacks are carried out, that's what seems to get the White House really riled up. They want to make sure that any civilian casualties are limited to the fullest extent possible, whereas the Israelis have said, we want to limit civilian casualties, but Hamas has left us very few options.
Yeah. So, Mark, has there been any separation here between the Harris campaign and the Biden White House? I mean, are they trying to stay away from each other on this, or has Harris had any comment on this? Do you know?
You bring up a good point. Harris was here at the White House yesterday. She was in the same meeting that the president had with his national security team. There was a progressive Democrat, Ro Khanna, congressman out of California, who said over the weekend that he believes that Harris will be looking for a new path forward. Now, whether or not that's really Khanna speaking on behalf of the campaign or more of just kind of reading tea leaves, we don't really know. But she has not had to answer a lot of questions.
Nope.
About what she would do in the Middle East. I was with her in Savannah over this past week, she was down in Georgia, and she was interrupted twice by protesters, pro-Palestinian protesters, and she addressed them. To her credit, she stops her speech and says, look, we're trying to make a deal. We're trying to end the bloodshed. But in terms of specifics, is if Biden does this, would she say this? No, we haven't really gotten there.
Well, maybe she'll just put her little earbuds in, and then everyone knows they can't ask her a question, right? Because certainly she can't even hear them.
There was some hubbub about some video of her getting on Air Force Two the other day with the old wired Apple AirPods in. I don't know what she was listening to
with her phone up to her ear. So she had earbuds in with her phone up to her ear. And we all know the White House could afford to give her some AirPods. But the problem with that is that then no one would see that she has them in. It wouldn't be as obvious. And then it's not as excusable that she couldn't hear her questions being asked.
I could also argue, and I don't know this for sure, I'm just completely speculating here, is that there could be a reason for using the wired headphones. It could also be a security feature.
Oh,
when you're doing wireless, you know, obviously it's easier for that signal to get picked up. I'm not saying that that's the case. I'm just saying that if I could see that also being a possibility. Remember when President Obama, in fact, we're showing the photo on our TV right now. Remember when President Obama first got like his iPhone, they had to like disable the camera. They've disabled. It's not quite the same smartphone device that we all have. And that is a good question for Harris, but I can't imagine we're going to get an answer anytime soon.
That's a great point, Mark. I'm glad, because I had not even thought about the fact that it might be a security issue. All right.
Yeah, it's possible, especially when you're transmitting. I mean, anything that's being put out there. Yes, where she is already secure. It's not like people will just pick up random AirPod signals, but again, there usually are safeguards in place for this kind of stuff.
Mark Meredith, I appreciate you giving me some time from the White House today, my friend. Thank you.
Absolutely. Give my best to everybody else back in St. Louis.
Yeah, we sure will. Appreciate that. Mark Meredith there and reporting from the White House lawn this morning.
Let's take bets on what we think Kamala Harris was listening to. Which one of Taylor Swift's songs do you think she was jamming out to?
It was Sammy Hagar.
Oh, you're right. I bet you Kamala Harris is a big Sammy Hagar fan.
She's from California.
She could. It could have been. Mm-hmm. I guess that's possible. Or ELO, one of the two. What do you think it was?
How ELO's to give a British. Speech 101? maybe it was a podcast, how to be unburdened by what has been.
Maybe it was Monica Lewinsky's TED Talk that she was listening to, you think? I mean, it's possible. She needs some motivation.
How
to get to the Oval Office is specifically what that podcast
How to have
was about.
A fake Southern accent. Right in. What do you think Kamala Harris was listening to? Or was it absolutely nothing and it was just all
it was
a,
no
a, dog
white
and,
noise.
A dog and pony show? A
it
lot of that,
white
yeah.
Noise. All right, coming up, there's an alert. The local police department needs your help tracking down somebody who sideswiped one of their cars this weekend. I'm going to talk about that when we come back in just a minute.
The person who should be applauded is the president who did the most selfless thing that anybody's done since George Washington, and that's true. And so anybody, all the machinations that got us there, that's all. None of that's going to be remembered, and it shouldn't be. What should be remembered is the selfless act of someone who, you know, it's very hard to let go of power.
That's sick. Those are corrupt bastards, Chris.
Yeah, that was George Clooney, if you didn't recognize it, thinks that Joe Biden stepping aside is the most selfless act since...
Steadfastly refuse all proposals. Even worse, at the exact same time, it murdered six of our hostages. Whoever murders hostages does not want a deal.
Yeah, that is an interpreter there covering Benjamin Netanyahu's address to the nation of Israel, where protests have broken out on the streets over there with a percentage of the population at least demanding some sort of an immediate ceasefire after the death of the five or six hostages that were announced, I believe, Friday is when we heard about that. Let's get to Mark Meredith, of course. He's a Fox News reporter. He's been at the White House all morning talking about the Biden administration's approach to all this. Mark, welcome in.
Mark, good to be with you. You're right. I mean, as we start this week, obviously it's a solemn note because they're having to come to the reality of these six hostages that were executed last week. Of course, that's just learning the details, including the American, the 23-year-old. And the White House has come out with a pretty strong statement saying they're outraged by this. They're devastated because they've been working to secure this man's release now for, what is it, 10 months, almost 11 months now. And you can imagine that the just outrage over the barbarity of the execution has gotten. But of course, there's also been a focus on what's next. The White House has been trying to say that they are still working with the U.S., I'm sorry, working with Qatar and Egypt to secure some sort of peace deal going forward. But you have to wonder, Mark, at this point, you know, how quickly is that really going to happen, given some of the comments of the last 24 hours?
I just wonder what else the U.S. expects out of Benjamin Netanyahu. In his speech, he said, We've come to the table. We've agreed to the terms of the ceasefire. It's Hamas who won't agree to anything. They won't even come to the table. Why is Benjamin Netanyahu being blamed for this?
Well, you've also seen some of the outrage in Israel, too, where they've been upset with Netanyahu as well. So I would imagine that it's kind of reactionary to both what's happening here in the United States, but also in Israel. As to, you know, Netanyahu has certainly had an interesting relationship with the Biden administration. Yes, in the immediate aftermath of the attacks, we saw the president make it very clear that the U.S. has no closer ally, that they were going to do whatever they can. But since then, as Israel's retaliated, we have, of course, seen the White House try to walk a fine line of what is support and what they think is acceptable and what is not. In terms of a peace deal, though, the president was asked yesterday, you know, is Netanyahu doing enough? Do you think that Netanyahu is working hard enough to secure peace? And the president said no, and then he moved on. He didn't really elaborate further from there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I saw a poll that 49% of Israelis support Netanyahu, 43% don't. I mean, he's been sort of on the cusp of being thrown out of office there several times, but he's managed to hang on to power. And in light of what the threat Hamas poses, like my co-anchor Kim was saying here earlier, isn't the hang up with Hamas the fact that they demand all of these Palestinians be released from Israeli jails? Is that sort of the key here, Mark? Do you know?
That is one of the hangups. Yes, that is one of the demands that Hamas would have. Essentially, you kind of think of it as an exchange, if you will, for those hostages that are still in custody of Hamas. You know, they're just going to say, well, we'll give you this for that. The U.S. obviously is really trying to find a way just to prevent further bloodshed. I mean, you talk about how many tens of thousands of lives have been disrupted ever since the violence of October 7th. The Israelis are saying, you know, we can't make a deal because we don't necessarily trust what's going to come next. And so the U.S. is hoping, by relying on our Mideast allies, that maybe they'd be able to hold together some sort of framework for a deal, because the U.S. doing it alone is clearly not going to work.
I know the International Criminal Court was accusing Netanyahu of war crimes because of his response to the attack on October 7th. Do you know any update to that by chance?
I don't. And the ICC obviously doesn't have as much weight here in the United States.
Right.
I mean, there's been, you know, it's one of those things where I feel like it's a headline that's made and then people just simply move on. And just in terms of the way that the ICC would not be recognized by the U.S. at this point. But obviously the White House has made it very clear that they would like to see Israel be able to defend itself, that they are going to do what they can to support them, prevent future terrorist attacks, because they see Hamas as the terrorist organization. But in terms of the way those retaliatory attacks are carried out, that's what seems to get the White House really riled up. They want to make sure that any civilian casualties are limited to the fullest extent possible, whereas the Israelis have said, we want to limit civilian casualties, but Hamas has left us very few options.
Yeah. So, Mark, has there been any separation here between the Harris campaign and the Biden White House? I mean, are they trying to stay away from each other on this, or has Harris had any comment on this? Do you know?
You bring up a good point. Harris was here at the White House yesterday. She was in the same meeting that the president had with his national security team. There was a progressive Democrat, Ro Khanna, congressman out of California, who said over the weekend that he believes that Harris will be looking for a new path forward. Now, whether or not that's really Khanna speaking on behalf of the campaign or more of just kind of reading tea leaves, we don't really know. But she has not had to answer a lot of questions about what she would do in the Middle East. I was with her in Savannah over this past week, and she was down in Georgia, and she was interrupted twice by protesters, pro-Palestinian protesters, and she addressed them. To her credit, she stops her speech and says, look, we're trying to make a deal. We're trying to end the bloodshed. But in terms of specifics, is if Biden does this, would she say this? No, we haven't really gotten there.
Well, maybe she'll just put her little earbuds in, and then everyone knows they can't ask her a question, right? Because certainly she can't even hear them.
There was some hubbub about some video of her getting on Air Force Two the other day with the old wired Apple AirPods in. I don't know what she was listening to
with,
or
with
not.
With her phone up to her ear. So she had earbuds in with her phone up to her ear. And we all know the White House could afford to give her some AirPods. But the problem with that is that then no one would see that she has them in. It wouldn't be as obvious. And then it's not as excusable that she couldn't hear her questions being asked.
I could also argue, and I don't know this for sure, I'm just completely speculating here, is that there could be a reason for using the wired headphones. It could also be a security feature.
Oh,
when you're doing wireless, you know, obviously it's easier for that signal to get picked up. I'm not saying that that's the case. I'm just saying that if I could see that also being a possibility. Remember when President Obama, in fact, we're showing the photo on our TV right now. Remember when President Obama first got like his iPhone, they had to like disable the camera. It's not quite the same smartphone device that we all have. That's a good question for Harris, but I can't imagine we're going to get an answer anytime soon.
That's a great point, Mark. I'm glad, because I had not even thought about the fact that it might be a security issue. All right.
Yeah, it's possible, especially when you're transmitting. I mean, anything that's being put out there, yes, where she is already secure. It's not like people will just pick up random AirPod signals, but, you know, again, there usually are safeguards in place for this kind of stuff.
Mark Meredith, I appreciate you giving me some time from the White House today, my friend. Thank you.
Absolutely. Give my best to everybody else back in St. Louis.
Yeah, we sure will. Appreciate that. Mark Meredith there and reporting from the White House lawn this morning.
Let's take bets on what we think Kamala Harris was listening to. Which one of Taylor Swift's songs do you think she was jamming out to?
It was Sammy Hagar.
Oh, you're right. I bet you Kamala Harris is a big Sammy Hagar fan.
She's from California.
It could have been. Mm-hmm. I guess that's possible. Or ELO, one of the two. What do you think it was?
How ELO's to give a British speech 101? maybe it was a podcast, how to be unburdened by what has been.
Maybe it was Monica Lewinsky's TED Talk that she was listening to, you think? I mean, it's possible. She needs some motivation.
How to debate.
How to get to the Oval Office is specifically what that podcast
How to have
was
a
about.
Fake Southern accent. Right in. What do you think Kamala Harris was listening to? Or was it absolutely nothing and it was just all
it was
a
no
dog
white
and,
noise.
A dog and pony show. A
it
lot of that,
white
yeah.
Noise. All right, coming up, there's an alert. The local police department needs your help tracking down somebody who sideswiped one of their cars this weekend. I'm going to talk about that when we come back in just a minute.
The person who should be applauded is the president who did the most selfless thing that anybody's done since George Washington, and that's true. And so anybody, all the machinations that got us there, that's all. None of that's going to be remembered, and it shouldn't be. What should be remembered is the selfless act of someone who, you know, it's very hard to let go of power.
That's sick. Those are corrupt bastards, Chris.
Yeah, that was George Clooney, if you didn't recognize it, thinks that Joe Biden stepping aside is the most selfless act since George Washington. I saw Hamilton the other day. They talked about that. Since George Washington stepped down and didn't run for re-election.
It makes me so sad. I really like George Clooney. And he just,
no, I
come
quit
on.
Liking him a while back.
What a joke to sit there and say it was so selfless. Joe stepped down because he was forced out by the other Democrats and he was going to lose the election.
Thank you.
It's not like he was like, you know what? I would like to do this out of the kindness of my heart. I think it's what's best for our country. No, he was absolutely forced out. The poor guy was.
Nancy Pelosi basically held a knife to his throat.
Didn't George Clooney write a letter saying that Joe should step down?
Yeah,
well, he did.
He was. You're right, because he was. Wasn't he there with Barack Obama on the big fundraiser event or whatever?
Support, right.
And then after the debate, wasn't George Clooney like, you know, I did notice that Joe Biden wasn't really with it when he was on stage. It's like, wow, now you forgot to mention that when you were encouraging people to spend millions of dollars to his campaign.
Yeah, they're all the same for sure. You know, I want to mention this. A friend of mine brought this to my attention from the DePere Police Department. If you go to their Facebook page, the DePere Department of Public Safety on Facebook, they posted a video from Friday night. They're trying to get some help. They had one of their officers was working a DWI enforcement detail out on southbound 270, just south of Doherty Ferry. And while the officer you see from the dash cam is parked on the side of the road with somebody pulled over in front of them, a white Jeep Grand Cherokee clipped the side of the police car. Like, it looks like tore maybe the the side view mirror off of the police car and just kept right on going.
It sounds like that person should have been pulled over for a DWI.
Well, I guess the officer was either out of the car. You don't see the officer in the video. And the white Jeep just kept going. So right now they're looking for a 2022 to 2025 white Jeep Grand Cherokee that suddenly has developed passenger side damage.
Do they have a license plate?
You can't see it. It goes by so fast. The headlights are so bright, you can't really see a license plate because they probably wouldn't need our help if they could. But they'd like your help chatting with the driver of that vehicle. If you know somebody with a white Jeep Grand Cherokee that is not parked in their garage being hidden right now that might have passenger side damage on the right side, hit a police car and just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, I guess it could have been stolen or something, but whatever. DePere, they're asking that you call the Kirkwood or DePere police departments and let them know that you might have some information on that. So anyway, I thought that was a bold move, but no, they don't have a license plate number. We should mention to people that coming up on the 11th, on 9/11, we're going to be out in Eureka. We're going to take the show live out there. We're going to be live outside of Chicken Ellie's. They talked about bringing in a stage for us and blocking off the street there. That's going to be better than where we were last time, which was on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're going to be outside there where everyone can gather around and kind of watch the show and interact with us during the commercial breaks. And it should be a good time. So we'll start the show. We'll do it from 5 to 9. And you can come. If you've never been to Chicken Ellie's for breakfast, oh, you're missing out.
It is good.
It's so delicious.
Yeah.
Plus, the Focus Marine Foundation is going to be down there. We'll be helping raise money for them. The community will come together, I'm sure, and a lot of the business owners chip in and contribute to the Focus Marine Foundation. They help people transition from military life back to civilian life, regardless of which branch of the military they're in. So those are good folks, and I love the fact that we're able to help them out. So plan to stop and see us on 9/11 if you're going to be down in the Eureka area, or make it a point to come down and say hello, please. All right, that's going to do it for us. Brian Kilmeade coming up next. And, of course, Mark and Annie in a little later today. And we'll see you back here Wednesday morning at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.
The person who should be applauded is the president who did the most selfless thing that anybody's done since George Washington. And that's true. And so anybody, all the machinations that got us there, that's all. None of that's going to be remembered, and it shouldn't be. What should be remembered is the selfless act of someone who, you know, it's very hard to let go of power.
That's sick. Those are corrupt bastards, Chris.
Yeah, that was George Clooney, if you didn't recognize it, thinks that Joe Biden stepping aside is the most selfless act since George Washington. I saw Hamilton the other day. They talked about that. Since George Washington stepped down and didn't run for re-election.
It makes me so sad. I really like George Clooney, and he just...
I quit liking him a while back.
What a joke to sit there and say it was so selfless. Joe stepped down because he was forced out by the other Democrats, and he was going to lose the election.
Thank you.
It's not like he was like, you know what? I would like to do this out of the kindness of my heart. I think it's what's best for our country. No, he was absolutely forced out. The poor guy was.
Nancy Pelosi basically held a knife to his throat.
Didn't George Clooney write a letter saying that Joe should step down?
Yeah,
well, he did.
He was. You're right, because he was. Wasn't he there with Barack Obama on the big fundraiser event or whatever?
Right.
And then after the debate, wasn't George Clooney like, you know, I did notice that Joe Biden wasn't really with it when he was on stage. It's like, wow. Now you forgot to mention that when you were encouraging people to spend millions of dollars to his campaign.
Yeah, they're all the same for sure. You know, I want to mention this. A friend of mine brought this to my attention from the DePere Police Department. If you go to their Facebook page, the DePere Department of Public Safety on Facebook, they posted a video from Friday night. They're trying to get some help. They had one of their officers was working a DWI enforcement detail out on southbound 270, just south of Doherty Ferry. And while the officer you see from the dash cam is parked on the side of the road with somebody pulled over in front of them, a white Jeep Grand Cherokee clipped the side of the police car. Like, it looks like tore maybe the the side view mirror off of the police car and just kept right on going.
It sounds like that person should have been pulled over for a DWI.
Well, I guess the officer was either out of the car. You don't see the officer in the video. And the white Jeep just kept going. So right now they're looking for a 2022 to 2025 white Jeep Grand Cherokee that suddenly has developed passenger side damage.
Do they have a license plate?
You can't see it. It goes by so fast. The headlights are so bright, you can't really see a license plate because they probably wouldn't need our help if they could. But they'd like your help chatting with the driver of that vehicle. If you know somebody with a white Jeep Grand Cherokee that is not parked in their garage being hidden right now that might have passenger side damage on the right side, hit a police car and just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, I guess it could have been stolen or something, but whatever. DePere, they're asking that you call the Kirkwood or DePere police departments and let them know that you might have some information on that. So anyway, I thought that was an interesting, that was a bold move, but
that
no, they don't have a license plate number. We should mention to people that coming up on the 11th, on 9/11, we're going to be out in Eureka. We're going to take the show live out there. We're going to be live outside of Chicken Ellie's. They talked about bringing in a stage for us and blocking off the street there. That's going to be better than where we were last time, which was on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
But then we're going to be outside there where everyone can gather around and kind of watch the show and interact with us during the commercial breaks. And it should be a good time. So we'll start the show. We'll do it from 5 to 9. And you can come. If you've never been to Chicken Ellie's for breakfast, oh, you're missing out.
It is good.
It's so delicious.
Yeah.
Plus, the Focus Marine Foundation is going to be down there. We'll be helping raise money for them. The community will come together, I'm sure, and a lot of the business owners chip in and contribute to the Focus Marine Foundation. They help people transition from military life back to civilian life, regardless of which branch of the military they're in. So those are good folks, and love the fact that we're able to help them out. So plan to stop and see us on 9/11 if you're going to be down in the Eureka area, or make it a point to come down and say hello, please. All right, that's going to do it for us. Brian Kilmeade coming up next. And, of course, Mark and Annie in a little later today. And we'll see you back here Wednesday morning at 5 a.m.
Get more at 971talk.com.